It's been more than a decade since the bodies of Ryan Riddle and Mark Prossy were found in a home in rural Chrisman, murdered by an unknown assailant that police are still searching for today. Said the lead investigator of the case, "I wear this case at home, I wear it on weekends, I wear it on vacations." Is it solvable? She asks. In this week's Cold Case podcast, longtime News Gazette media reporter Carol Varell studies the decade-old double murder and talks to relatives about what they hope can be done to solve it. We'll be back after this. Hey, Jim Rosso, News Gazette Media Vice President, reminding you that we have a ton of podcasts available at newsgazette.com every day of the week, from Dave Gentry's Morning Show to Scott Beatty's News Hour to Brian Barnhart's Penny for Your Thoughts. Head to our website, newsgazette.com, and search for podcasts.
Terry Romine of Villa Grove is keeping the promise he made to his wife before she passed away. He will never give up doing whatever he can to find out who killed her son in 2008. Juanita's son, Ryan Riddle, was 7 years old when she and Terry Romine were married, Terry becoming Ryan's stepfather, Morgan and Michelle becoming Ryan's stepsisters. Later, Terry Romine says, Ryan met a guy at the University of Illinois, Mark Prossy of Hoopston, and he and Ryan became best friends.
He brought him home, I think it was a freshman year, one day, and Mark walked in the front door, and we never met him at all. Threw a bag of laundry on the floor and told Juanita, "Hi, Mom." He was funny, and the girls, he always had them laughing. Went four-wheeling with him and Mark before. We've been camping, and they were always out socializing. They liked to go have a beer and talk to everybody.
They did all kinds of things together through the years. They lived together at one time, built a house together, and they also died together, both at the age of 32. Ryan was married at the time to Amy, and they were expecting a child. Mark was involved in a serious relationship. Who would want Ryan and Mark dead? And why? Two very good friends, described as good guys.
$10 million question. I mean, somebody did.
A puzzling case that remains a mystery more than a decade later. Extremely frustrating. Disheartening. Going back to that Monday in 2008, January 28th, started out like any normal day. Mark went to his job at North American Lighting in Paris, Ryan taking care of farm duties. Ryan picked Mark up from work around 4 in the afternoon, and they went to a meeting in Tuscola. The lead investigator on the case, Illinois State Police Sergeant Kim Cessna, describes what happens next on that fateful day.
All day was a normal day. I mean, they'd had conversations with their significant others, with their spouses. There was nothing during that day that gave an indication of, you know, what would come. So that evening, Ryan was giving Mark a ride, picked him up from a meeting, and actually was giving him a ride home. They made one stop at a little, it's public record. They made one stop at the JT1 stop. We have the time for that. They made that stop, and then we can only estimate, of course, you know, with speed limits and all that. We assume after that JT1 stop, they went back to Mark's house, yes.
But what started out as a normal day became anything but normal that evening when they were both at Mark's home just outside Chrisman. Police have been able to determine the stop at JT1 in Newman was around 7:20, then silence. Ryan was expected back at his rural Villa Grove home and hadn't shown up. Calls between 8:15 and 10:50 to both men from Ryan's wife and stepmother went unanswered. They call the Edgar County Sheriff's Office for a welfare check, leading to a shocking discovery.
So when they got there, there didn't appear to be any, forced entry to the house. And when the deputies arrived, they obviously saw what they believed to be two victims. So they could see that from just looking in the windows. So
can you say where they were in the house?
Not really. And I think that might have significance for later. You know what I mean?
And you said that there was no indication of forced entry, huh?
Right. So that was talking to some of the people that knew Mark. That wasn't unusual because I guess he was the type of person that didn't really secure his house ever. So he wasn't one to lock the doors. He wasn't one to, you know, be very adamant about things being locked.
Ryan and Mark were dead, murdered, victims of multiple gunshot wounds, two families devastated. Terry can tell you all about a bad knock on the door.
Were you in this house then?
Yeah, I was getting ready to go to work, and then I had to wake Juanita up and Morgan.
And the knock at the door was who?
A coroner, and then Ryan's stepmom. Ryan's stepmom and Amy are the one that called the police the night before. We weren't notified until 6:30 the next morning about anything.
The Edgar County Sheriff's Office reaches out to state police for help.
The initial call came into Edgar County, mm-hmm. So then they reach out to our agency for assistance. They utilized our crime scene. You know, we had three different crime scene officers that were there. Usually we don't get that. We get one. But, you know, we had some evidence that geared towards the expertise of one. So, you know, we reached out to more than one crime scene. So we had three different crime scene folks. And then by the time our agents got there, it was sometime after. So that's kind of how the wheel works. I think I probably live the closest there. So I was the first ISP person there to arrive on that scene. So back to your question, as far as things sticking out in our mind, you know, not really. The vehicles that Mark drove, the people said that were supposed to be there were there, so it wasn't like, oh, well, you know, there's supposed to be XYZ there, and it's not there. So everything that we learned from people that knew him, because you got to remember, we personally don't know these guys, so we rely on family, on friends, on, you know, neighbors to kind of give us a victimology, so to speak, of these two. But yeah, there wasn't anything that stuck out as far as there was something that was supposed to be there, there wasn't.
Also, no weapons were found at the crime scene. Neither victim had a criminal history, so nothing in their background provided clues. Not much to go on. Sergeant Cessna declines to reveal the number of times each was shot, what part of their bodies, where the bodies were found in the house, kinds of guns or caliber of bullets to protect the integrity of the investigation, details that only the killer or killers would know.
They always said from the beginning what they had they could not, you know, share with anybody because only the person or persons that did it knew. So that's my theory, that if maybe you release a little bit, somebody would get nervous. And if it was two people instead of one, then one might turn on the other or try to run. And
who would do this? Shoot and kill these two men? And why? The Prossy family has maintained privacy since the unthinkable happened to Mark. Ryan's stepfather, Terry Romine, says Ryan's wife, Amy, moved out of the area and he has little or no contact with her. In the meantime, Terry pushes through sorrow and pain, and the questions of who did this and why haunt him.
Wouldn't have a clue because they can't be human and no conscience whatsoever.
Many wondered if their deaths were related to a brutal crime spree involving two Chicago men, Yusef Brown and William Thompson, in June of 2007, where Douglas County Chief Deputy Tommy Martin was shot and killed, and Ryan Riddle was tied up along with two friends after the two men forced their way into Ryan's rural Villa Grove home as they fled from police. 7 months before Ryan was fatally shot, they eventually ended up in Arcola, where Thompson held hostages in a bank. But Sergeant Cessna says police ruled this theory out.
I can tell you this, though, unequivocally, those two people have both provided, and this was after the fact, have both provided statements, affidavits, that they did not know that house that they went to. So I'm confident to say that that's easy to make that transition or that correlation, but it's very obvious, and this was after the sentencing. So these people had, you know, they had really not a dog in the fight, so to speak, when they made these statements. So both those people indicated that that house was not targeted. They had no idea the house that they went to. They were driving around running from the police, and they see guys drinking on the porch in the middle of the day and was like, this one will work. So So I can shut the door on that. We work that extensively because, of course, you know, that came up in our mind as well. Mm-hmm. So it's not something that you just slough off. So I'm comfortable in saying those two incidents are not related.
Police have pursued numerous theories since then, but still believe that Mark and Ryan were targeted. But why?
You have to go back to their, you know, there's motives of on why, you know, people do this to other people. You know, usually it's money, you know, there's a financial side of it, or it's a revenge, or like a, you made me mad, I'm going to do this to you. But as far as the current theory of what happened, I will say this. I think that the person responsible for this went there for this and this only. They had their mind made up when they went there. It didn't escalate. They knew what they were going to do when they went there. So I'm comfortable saying that. You would have had to have known where this house was. A little bit about their schedules. Has it changed over the years? Yeah. You know, you follow leads that say, you know, was it a murder for hire? Was it the thing that we have to remember, because I've worked those cases too, the thing in murder for hires, one person always talks. Regardless of the situation, if there's more than one person involved, someone gets tricked up and that person always talks. In this case, though, there's not been a lot of talking. So, and, you know, in our minds, was one person responsible? It looks that way because, you know, nobody's ever really come forward and said, you know, hey, I heard this or that.
So basically you're saying that they were targeted that night.
I guess I believe they were, yeah.
And that it was only one person who...
The reason I feel like it's one person, like I said, because if it was more than one, I think by now, it being the length of time, somebody would have talked by now.
You just wouldn't believe how hard it is on a family to go through this, and then you don't hear anything from the authorities for long periods of time, and you're wondering all the time, are they working on it? Is anything being done? Not been a lot of fun holidays ever since. So the anniversary of that, Ryan's birthday is the 15th of January, and that happened on the 28th. So that's a bad month.
Any suspects? Cessna says persons of interest continue to evolve. At this point, she says everyone is still a suspect. Could advances in DNA technology zero in on who did this?
I will tell you this. I'm comfortable in telling you that DNA continues to advance. And what I mean by that, and there are things in 2018 that we didn't have available in 2008. So just kind of keep that in mind. So, and I think I'll leave it at that.
As the investigation continues, Terry Romine is trying to cope with a lot of heartbreak. First, he lost his stepson, Ryan, and his friend, Mark, in 2008, and then his wife, Juanita, passed away in 2015. He says work and his daughters get him through each day.
Lots of work, and got my girls still, so...
So are you a farmer, too?
Or? No, I'm a John Deere mechanic. I work at Atwood for Sloan's.
So you just put all your energy and focus into working then, huh?
Yeah. Yep. Stay busy.
In the meantime, Sergeant Cessna wants people to know police have continued to actively pursue this case, just adding another report in June.
To say this is a cold case, I mean, everybody's got a different definition of a cold case, but we still actively work this case. I mean, I'm looking at reports in this folder that I just did June 4th of this year. So to say this is a cold case, it's cold in the fact that it's been so long since it's happened, but it's not cold in the fact that it sits on the shelf and nobody looks at it. So what I think the public can do, and what we've asked before, we've had task forces on the anniversary. You know, we've had other people come in from different zones. We had a society called the Vidoc Society look at it in Philadelphia. You know, I went out there, presented the case to them. So we've done a lot with this case. We've had other people, other local agencies look at it and provide input. Our agents are constantly asking people, hey, at the end of interviews, hey, do you know anything about this case? Do you know anything about any other, you know, unsolved cases? Do you know, because it might not be this one in particular, people might say, oh, well, no, you know, I don't know anything about this case, but I know about a girl that was killed and wherever. So we try to train our new people, the people that have been here, because I think the master sergeant that just retired says it best when he said, this is a backpack that you never take off. So I wear this case home. I wear it on weekends. and I wear it on vacations. I'm going to wear it probably till something happens with it. So is it solvable? I mean, the reality is this. I'm a realist, and despite everyone's hard efforts, this case may never, ever be solved. But I also hope that people will find it in their hearts to be like, this was somebody. I mean, these two people are someone somebody. So, you know, if people know anything, if they hear anything, because it may take us a while, but we eventually track down those leads.
Someone has anonymously set up a reward of at least $25,000 through a Villa Grove bank to go to anyone who can help solve this senseless crime. Can you be the one to provide the clue to crack this case open? Someone is out there who is not hesitant to kill.
I guess I will just plead to those people that these were somebody. So if they have any information, regardless of how minuscule or whatever it might seem to them, just please call us and we'll do our due diligence in tracking things down. Hopefully somebody will provide some information that will point us in the right direction. So I do feel like, I will add one more thing. I do feel like we captured about everything we could capture in 2008 that we were in fear of disappearing. And with that, I mean video surveillance, cell phone records. I think that we were thinking beyond 2008 when this happened, because I'm pretty confident that we have all the records we could have obtained from that night. So we have them preserved. And so if we ever do need to go back through that stuff, we have it.
I'd like to tell Ryan's friends, I mean, they can think of anything, even though they don't think it matters. It might matter. People, if they can think of anything that might have been, you know, unusual, or they didn't think Ryan would have been doing or whatever, they can call and talk to Kim, and she can do what she's supposed to do and then move on to the next door.
If you have information, you can remain anonymous by calling the Illinois State Police tip line at 217-278-5004. 217-278-5004. No one will answer, so leave a message. If you would like to talk to Sergeant Kim Cessna, you can reach her at 278-5000. That's 278-5000.
And like I said, I don't know if they're just, you know, I don't know. We can go down that hole. Are they a psychopath? I mean, I don't know. Something's causing him not to talk. So, I mean, if you're able to do that to two people and just go about living your life, and I think maybe when we do focus on that one person, we'll find out that things dramatically change for them.
Would that give you some kind of a sense of closure if we could?
Not until they catch them. And it's what I promised my wife, I wouldn't give up, and that's why I keep calling. And
why you're doing this interview today.
And why I'm doing this interview, but it's tough.
I'm Carol Varell.